Blessed be the name of my rock, who trains my hands for war, who causes me to walk in his overcoming power forevermore. Blessed be the name of my rock. Blessed be the name of my shield. Blessed be the Lamb who will open the scroll.
Welcome to the show, Stephen. I'm just getting my brain together here.
Well, it's been an interesting week since we last talked, and so many things have happened since then. I met a gentleman down in Atlanta, and a man that is very close friends with a retired Navy SEAL commander, and a very high-ranking officer at that. And from what I was told, he had been a part of the Navy SEALs for 20 years. That's a long time to be with the Navy SEALs, because that's a grueling group as it is. And as a result of some of the information he shared with me, I thought I would share that with the listeners here tonight. I did do a video on our own channel about it, which in one day has already reached almost 75,000 views.
Wow. And
I had a feeling it would probably get a lot of views. I know that when I did the video back, several years back, entitled The Fallen Angels in Prison in Antarctica and Are Still Alive, I did that based on the Book of Enoch. On that particular video, it reached over 1 million views on my channel. And then I had another channel that I ran it on as well, Fact News Network, which I don't do very often, but I use it as a backup channel. And over there, it hit 1.7 million views. So I realize there's a lot of people that are interested about that. And of course, we know that Enoch records it in the I believe it's the 8th chapter. And when I was doing this video here, I went back into that again, because that's how I figured out it was Antarctica, was the description that Enoch gave. I think that was chapter 18, if I remember right. In fact, what I'll do, just so I know where it's at, I'm going to pull up. Yes, chapter 18. That's what I wanted to do, is see where it actually was there. And when you're reading chapter 18, he describes the location of where they're imprisoned so well that it makes it nearly impossible not to know that they were imprisoned in Antarctica. He talks about it being a cold place. It's daylight both night and day. He talked about, but yet like a desert, driest place on the planet, which Antarctica is considered to be a frozen desert. I think it has like only less than a half an inch of rain as far as precipitation annually.
Mm-hmm.
And so when I did that video initially, I go into all of that, and then it talks about, I talked about those seven mountains. And sure enough, there's a place down there called Mount Vincent. It's a seven mountain, with the center mountain, Mount Vincent being the summit. And then they go to the east, I think it was south and east or something, or south and west. I forget now which way they go. But they're a little off on the way they run. But if you take into account the flood and what happened back during the Antediluvian destruction, and then put the earth back the way it did sit at one point, then the mountains now are repositioned into the direction that Enoch describes it as.
So these Nephilim, they were not killed in the flood. They rather were born after the flood. Is that right?
Well, actually, you have Nephilim that are born before the flood and after the flood, both. And that's something that a lot of people are not aware of.
Yes, that there was a second incursion, says L.A., through the Tower of Babel?
You know, it's interesting you say it, Bonnie. If you remember when L.A. Was speaking there in Oregon, when you hosted that meeting there, he was sitting in the very back when I was speaking And I got into that subject. And when I did, LA gets up. He comes all the way to the front row and sits right there close to where he could hear everything. And I had not met LA until that particular meeting. And afterwards, we met and we talked. And it was so funny. He tells me, he says, when you got on that subject there about the Nephilim, he said, and the way you were bringing out things that, he said, I was not aware of, he said, I knew I had to be on the front row so I didn't miss anything.
Well, good.
We became good friends on that meeting, and we still stay in touch. We normally just, though, talk privately about things. You know, I'll share with him things that I know about, what I might know about, and then he'll share with me things that he's been working on. So it's always been a nice relationship that way. But so anyway, Enoch describes that. And of course, like you mentioned, we have the incursions both before and after. You could even argue the house of Israel also had done the same thing, because when you go back to the book of Numbers, and I'll see if I can pull that up real quick to find exactly where it's at there. We read in the Hebrew scriptures, you don't see it as easily in English because they don't translate it that way. But in, I think it's Numbers 21, and I'll just make sure of that here real quick. Could be chapter 18. Maybe it's 18. Let me look real fast. But this is where, and it could be 13. I'll know in a second. Yeah, let me just see. Yes, actually chapter 13 in the Hebrew scriptures there. And if you go down to Lamed Gimel, for those of you that can understand and read Hebrew, I'll read that to you. It says, Vesham ra'inu et hanaflim b'nei anak min hanafalim. Now, I don't use the vowel punctuation that is placed here because, in my opinion, they placed it incorrectly. And for those that may not know, we know that the vowels were put in about 200 years after Christ. And they were put in there to help people to know how to pronounce the words. Now, the reason why I disagree with them on this particular issue is because when Moses wrote it, he actually wrote it with two different spellings. He has Nephilim, which at the first part of the sentence where it says et ha-Nephilim, he spells it hey. Nun fe yod lamed yod mim. When he spells it min ha-Nephilim or Nephilim, where he talks about Enoch comes from the Nephilim or the fallen ones, he spells it without the extra yod. It's hey nun fe lamed yod mim.
What verse is this?
This is verse 33.
Okay.
So in the English version of that. So when you're reading that, what's fascinating to me is that he's saying that the sons of Enoch are fallen ones, or Nephilim. But he says Enoch himself was born of a fallen angel. That's why he spells it differently. Now, in English, they just spell it the same in both cases. Well, I don't know if there's an English Bible that would actually do it like that. I know in the Mechon Mamre, .org, their version of it in the English, they'll spell both as just Nephilim. And they do the vowel punctuation the same way, and that's why I disagree with that, because clearly Moses was showing you the difference that Enoch, his father, was a fallen angel, is what he's saying.
Okay, Anak, not Enoch, Anak.
Right.
Anak is a fallen angel. Exactly. I mean, Anak is... Is he a fallen angel or is he a Nephilim, the son of a human and a fallen angel?
He would be a Nephilim at that point.
Yeah, right. Okay. Okay, and this is verse...
That's verse 33 in chapter 13 of the book of Numbers.
Okay.
So, yeah, if you read...
Oh, yes. Right, and we saw giants there. Uh-huh. Exactly. Nephilim, yes.
Exactly. So that's how we know that they were already here, and this is even before, of course. Now, the important thing to remember on that as well is that you're dealing with the Hittites, Perizzites, Jebusites, the Amorites, And we know this just by looking, going back up into the whole passage, like verse 29, Hittite, Jebusite, Amorite, Canaanites.
Yes, all the sons of Canaan.
Right, and so these are the same families that are mentioned in the Babylonian, where L.A. Marzulli speaks about that. If you go back to what he's talking about, the Babylonian aspect, and that is found in the book of Ezra, when they had mingled the seed. Now,
yes.
The Dead Sea Scrolls is far more condemning of that act than what you see in the canon. Ezra chapter 9 is where that's at, where we see that the people of Israel, the priests and the Levites, they didn't separate themselves from the peoples of the land, doing according to their abominations, even of the Canaanites, and it mentions those families again. And then he goes into the second verse, says, for they have taken of their daughters for themselves and for their sons, and that the holy seed have mingled themselves with the peoples of the lands. And so this is where, and this is why we know that they were Nephilim, because we already know that from the scripture too, that they were already a Nephilim race. So they mingled in with a Nephilim race, and of course their children became, hybrid as well, just like it was. And this is why God never wanted them to do that, because he didn't, the seed line of Israel had to be pure for the sake of the coming of the Mashiach, the Messiah, which would have been Yeshua, Jesus. So that was the purpose for that. And of course, you know, God still kept it pure, one part of it pure, so that that pure bloodline could come through. But Satan was just bent on
perverting
it as much
bent
as he could.
On it. He is so determined.
Yeah.
And his workers, his minions, are so determined.
That's exactly right. And so that's kind of, so that just kind of sets that stage for what we're even talking about now, Bonnie, about
that's
this,
right.
This
but
situation.
Some of the what turned out, only Jonathan, supported by Meshullam and Sabbatai, the Levite, opposed this. So there are three, and these names we find again in the leadership of Israel. They opposed Ezra when he said, put away your Canaanite, interbreeding your wives and anything that came, any children that came from that wife.
Yes, and that's what, right, now here's what's interesting, because I know that when I really began to expose what happened here, there was a concerted effort made in certain circles to try to downplay modern-day Phariseeism, because the rabbis of Israel, especially in certain Orthodox circles, and Nehemiah Gordon is really, he will definitely tell you that you cannot be an Orthodox rabbi unless you can prove that you're descendant from the Pharisees.
Yeah.
Now, when we say this, keep in mind, though, not all Pharisees corrupted their bloodline. It's only a certain, we don't
that's
know
right.
who did it or how they did it. That, and that's neither here nor there. But the point is, though, there is a tainted
bloodline.
There is,
and it continues today. Yes.
Exactly. So that's why Yeshua says, by their fruits you shall
that's
know.
That's right.
Them.
There we go. It's the fruits. I mean,
exactly.
Don't judge anybody to you or not, you know, don't, I mean, not judge, but discern. We can discern.
Exactly. So,
and it's the fruits.
Yes.
So these, why did some of them go, these are the Nephilim. Why did some of the Nephilim, because some were still in the Middle East. I mean, American troops have run into them there. Why did some of them go hide in really the Netherlands of the earth, which is Antarctica?
Well, the ones that are in Antarctica, there are the ones that actually committed the acts against women pre-flood are imprisoned in that area. This is really where it gets interesting, Bonnie. I tell you what, before we move away from this, let me just real quick let people know. The issue, though, about Ezra was that they were to separate from them. And from what I understand, they did. But when when Cyrus wrote on the famous Cyrus cylinder that he was sending all the people back to their homelands, that included those Hittites, Perizzites, Jebusites, and Canaanites and Ammonites, all those families that you see mentioned there in Ezra 9. And they didn't return to some other country. They went back to the what we would call the state of Israel today in that area there, because that's where they were from. And Cyrus actually sent all the families back, not just the Israelites. He felt compelled that every family should go back. So those children that had married in amongst, that were born of these different priests and different people of Israel, they also went back. And then when the priesthood was overthrown in Israel, if you remember, the Maccabees were really instrumental in that. In fact, Judas Maccabee is mentioned of in history, not biblically, but in history. He was called a giant.
Ooh.
He was not, and he's described as a very tall man. And that's something a lot of people don't realize, that that's actually out there, that we have historical documentation about that.
Whoa.
So anyway, there's
because they usurped not only the priesthood, but the kingship.
Yes, yes. They did everything like that. So this is how that crept in there. And then, of course, then we ended up with the Pharisees, and that's how we know that that bloodline was there, mainly because Yeshua identified them.
Yeah, right.
He let you know who they were.
That's right. And it's not the common people. It is the leaders.
Yes. And they're the ones that, if you look at the Hebrew Matthew, you can see that they persuaded the people to go against Jesus. Not that they were against him naturally, but through the persuasion. And as
threats.
Yeah, he points out many times in Scripture when he was here that the people were fearful of being thrown out of the synagogue if they dare stood with him.
That's right, because there were only two choices. You either are in the synagogue or you are in Mithra in Rome, with Rome.
Yes.
And they knew that Mithra, the Mithra religion, was debauched and pagan. And so they didn't really have a choice. But the leaders would chuck them, throw them out, if they didn't toe the line. And, you know, I mean, that is why so many people in the New Testament are so humble before the Pharisees.
Yes,
they're
absolutely
afraid.
Very, very true. So anyway, so we move down, we go back to the pre-flood period there, when the as we read in Genesis 6, where it speaks about how that the sons of God saw the daughters of man, that they were fair. This is where we get the account in the canon of what took place. And, of course, you have to go to the book of Enoch to find out what happens to them for the crimes they did against humanity. And this is how we ended up with the giants in the land. It was their children, their offspring. But they're actually imprisoned. And when I did the study on it, to me, their imprisonment was Antarctica. But then time goes on, and what happened was that I had multiple meetings here in Atlanta recently, and I got to hear quite a few very interesting stories. And I'll just call the guy, the Navy SEAL commander, we'll call him Julius. But he was the things that were shared were beyond mind-boggling. I'm going to back up on one, and I'll share this one story here because it kind of builds a scenario of which direction we'll go in. And Bonnie, let me know when we get close to that stopping point.
Yeah, we're at 20.
Okay, so we can get into the first one with no problem.
Yeah.
Then. All right, so what happens here was that our government, that some of the locals in a particular village had been speaking about these alien beings that were coming into their community there and saying that they were in very serious trouble and that they needed to warn them about something that was going to happen. And you know, at first I just kind of ignored them. They said that they didn't bother anybody, but they said these beings would come in. They would wear like, well, I don't even know how to describe it, like a full black hooded suit where their head would be covered, their hands would be covered, all the way down to the feet. And so you couldn't really see the alien inside of it, their little village, and they would say that, you need to get someone here. We have a message. We need to warn you of something coming. So they did contact the U.S., and the U.S. sent a Navy SEAL team in, and this is how I found out about it initially. And as I was hearing the story, so what they did is when they went there, as usual, the Navy SEALs, if they know there's alien beings in an area, they generally are going to want to try to capture one.
Yeah.
That's how we have several in. And there's, I forget the number of SEALs that were there. The locals expressed that if you go out this particular road right here, go for a little ways, you're bound to run into them. They wouldn't go. They just said you're bound to run into them. So they go out and they get about 2 miles out. And when they do, sure enough, next thing you know, standing about 50 yards away is this being that looks just like they described, black hoodie on and everything. And so the commander says to his team by radio, he said, all right, we need to get ready. He says, you know, when we get close enough to him, we'll try to take him. And then the one of his guys, the alien began to speak to him telepathically. And he said to him, he says, we come in peace and we mean you no harm. And do not try to capture us.
Wow.
So, you know, he radios back to his boss and he says to him, he says, they're saying don't try to capture them, that they come in peace. And he says, what is he standing there beside you? And he says, no. He said, he's talking in my head. And so Julius, he goes, well, I don't care what he says. We're going to capture one of them. And now the being speaks to all of them telepathically at the same time. He says, I told you we come in peace. If we want to kill you, we would have already killed you. So he says, if you will follow me, he said, I will take you back to our leader, who wants to speak to your leader. And so they agree to follow him, and they go for a little ways there. And as they come up to this little canyon area, not a big canyon, but he said it was about 40-foot tall cliff of rock there in a little valley. And Julius got concerned that the entities were going to try to capture them.
Right. It's not defensible.
Them. Right. So he says, so he radios to his guys. He said, look, he said, if they're going to ambush us, he said, this is the perfect place for them to do it in. So he gives command for several of his guys to flank each side of the top of the cliffs there, get in position. And he says, we'll continue into the canyon with this being. So the being then, he knows what they're saying. So he says to them, he said, if we wanted to capture you or ambush you, we would have already done it.
Yeah.
So he says, we're not going to. And to make a long story short, they end up into the canyon right there. Then the next thing you know, the alien, without him even realizing it, moves through a dimension, and he's standing there right there next to Julius.
Sheesh.
And he said, if you'll follow me into the rock, he said, my commander wants to meet you. And he does. And at first he says, he sees the alien do it. He tells his guys, he said, well, he said, I'm either about to smash my face in this rock or I'm going through it with him. But he says, you know what to do if, you know what happened if something goes bad.
What was the warning? Well, we are at 25, 27. Like swift steeds, they will run. They will leap to mountain like a flame of fire, like a chariot in the sun.
Forevermore. Blessed be the name of my rock, who trains my hands for war, who causes me to walk in his overcoming power forevermore. Blessed be the name of my rock. Blessed be the name of my shield.
Okay, what was the oil?
Blessed be the Lamb who will open the scroll.
It's kind of a good story.
It is. It is. And this is going to get even crazier in just a minute.
Oh, man.
He goes through the rock with several of his men with him. And when they go in there, the leader of this alien group, which actually the, I think they're called Arthrithians, something to that effect. I forget the exact name of them now. I actually knew it because, and I'll explain that in a minute anyway. But so he goes through there and the leader is there and he says to Julius, he said, we are wanting to warn you of something that's going to befall your planet in the very near future. He said, you know already of the reptilians that live within the core of the Earth here. Not the inner Earth, but in the core. In other words, they have a lot of underground tunnels and networks here. And he says, and you know that they are very violent, and you know they would kill you in a heartbeat. They're just that type of alien being. And he says, and for us, they hate us as well. They said, but we have never come to this planet to do you any harm. And for us, they said, we know how to evade them. We know how to hide from them and them not be able to find us. But you, on the other hand, do not have that ability. And he said, but that's not where your big problem is. He said, there is a planet coming that you normally refer to as Nibiru, which is Planet X, one and the same. And he said to him, he said, the thing is that when this planet comes, there is another type of reptilian on that planet. And that version of reptilian is much more sinister than the ones you're dealing with now. And they're much larger than the ones you're dealing with now. And they will kill you. And the problem is they are very much bent on taking out as much of the human race as they can when they come.
I wonder if that's the Seven Thunders.
I don't know, but I'm going to tell you a little bit more about them.
Okay.
After I had this meeting, I ended up... I had my regular weekly meeting that I did with the Pentagon. So I brought up them, the discussion that I was in. And of course, they said, yes, we know fully well about it. We, you know, the counterpart I work with said, I actually read Julius's report. They said, this is one of the reasons why you were brought in on the ancient documents and what you could ascertain about Planet X for us as well, is in part because of his report and also because of the document that we have, the classified version of the Mayan document that told us what happened initially when Planet X came through back during the Antediluvian destruction. And how that they were imprisoned at that time. And that was one of the issues they wanted to find out as well, was could I figure out where those fallen angels were imprisoned? They said, because we know they're imprisoned on the Earth, but we don't know where, and we can't figure that out. Well, I knew they were imprisoned in Antarctica, but I did not realize that we run into them possibly already.
Wasn't it 2020? Kerry and I think Obama, it is reported, he didn't own up to that, but he was awfully close. Patriarch Kirill from Moscow, yes, the leader of the Eastern Orthodoxy, he went down there with that artifact, yeah, whatever it was.
Yeah, what happened, and that's what I'll go into as well on this half hour as well, Bonnie, is that what the world never knew about, was never made public, was we got into a physical battle with Russia over the Antarctica.
What was his name? He graduated Bowdoin College. He's their mascot. He went down there after World War II.
Oh, you're talking about Admiral Byrd.
Byrd. Yes.
Yes. Well, what happened was we had discovered down there quantum technology. There was a lot of technology in Antarctica on a quantum level. And of course, China, Russia, and the United States are all the three that are the main three powers that control that region. And it ended up in a skirmish of sorts, which basically was going to go into a full-blown war. I was told that that's really not even over yet.
Okay, you're not talking about the battle with Byrd after World War
II.
No.
This is modern.
This is modern. I see.
Yes.
Was this about the time that everyone was going down there visiting?
Yes. Okay. This is what you'll find out. If you go back to, I think, around December of 2015, This is when the Ark of Gabriel was discovered under Mecca.
Yeah.
They were doing some construction work or something of that effect. They ran into the Ark there. The Saudis tried multiple times to get it out, and it killed them. The plasma ejections were causing they literally killed thousands. The Saudis ended up putting out, it was a stampede that led to the deaths of all these people there, and that's what killed them. But it wasn't. It was this Ark of Gabriel that they were trying to get out. Well, after several attempts that they couldn't get it out, they contacted the Russians and they asked for Kirill to help them to get it out. There was some kind of document that led them believe that he would be, or not so much Kirill himself, but it would be through the Russian Orthodox Church that they would know what to do, that they had the information of what to do to get that Ark out of there. And from everything that I've been able to find out, he did agree that he didn't know what to do, and they helped them to get the Ark out of there without killing everybody. The Russians sent down one of their ships there. No one has ever, it's a scientific ship that stopped in Saudi Arabia. They never tell about what they load onto the ship, but then it goes to Antarctica. So by, I think, February of 2016, it's in Antarctica. Now, somewhere along the way there, we get into a confrontation with them. And I don't know if it's before that, exactly when. I wasn't told the details of the confrontation, but it was almost going into a full-blown war. And as a result of Rome, and Kirill ended up negotiating a peace treaty with the United States and Russia. And this is why they met in Cuba, a neutral ground to sign the agreement that would stop them fighting over Antarctica. That's why you see all these famous dignitaries go down to Antarctica after the fact, signing the agreement as part of, and that was what was interesting. John Kerry goes down there right before the election. He should have been back at home because of the election to support his president. But he wasn't, or in this case, to support Hillary. So what happens, though, they have to sign that agreement. This was all bringing about the peace, but also to see what was discovered down there. So that kind of was what was going on at that particular time there that nobody ever really knew about. At the same token, though, because of the things that are there and all those particular things there, we've had several things that have taken place. This happened down there where we've sent in the Navy SEALs to investigate what was going on. And we won't have time for everything there, but I'm going to go into the more important one. And that was where Julius, besides the encounter there with the Ethiopians and warning about Planet X coming, and that it's actually what's on there is called Alpha Draconians. And Alpha Draconians run anywhere from 15 to 20 foot tall. And if you've ever seen, there's a movie, I forget the name of, I know Galaxy is part of the name. It's a comedy they did, kind of like making fun of Star Wars, or not Star Wars, but Star Trek.
Huh?
And I forget the name of the actor in there, but I just know it's something Galaxy. But anyway, in that movie that they made, there is a creature they show, this kind of got like a reptilian face, and he's got all this kind of like armor on his body and stuff. When that movie came out, those that knew about the Alpha Draconians knew that whoever made the movie was given inside information, because we knew that this is what they look like.
Mm. Huh.
Other than the height. They don't show the true height of them.
Right.
So if you want to get an idea, in fact, in the video I do, I show a clip of that.
Oh, wow. Well, you know, there's a direct pipeline from Satan to Hollywood.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. Hollywood is part of the... I'm going to tell you what's coming, but I'm going to put it in a story so you'll never really believe it.
You know, the thing is, I met with a very, very, I can't call his name because of some of the things that we've discussed, but I met a very famous Hollywood producer recently. And one of the things he told me was that you have no idea how connected the U.S. government and Hollywood are.
Yeah.
And I said, well, I assume that's to get across the message they want to do. And he said, that is very true.
Yeah.
So they are connected.
Yes.
So we skip past the Alpha Draconians now. We kind of move back forward. So he goes, now he's being sent. They're in a submarine. His team are on a sub. He said they went really deep under Antarctica. And he said when you come up into a cave. He said they were able to dock the submarine there. He said it's very easy to do. And we were being asked, as far as that's Julius and the Navy SEALs, to go and explore this tunnel. Allegedly, there's some type of anomalies in there, and they want to find out what it is. He said, so he said, Nick, when you're thinking of a cave, he said, it's not a small cave by no means. He said, if you were to take six of my men and stretch your hands all the way out, and you still wouldn't touch the sides of the cave. That's how big it is. So at least minimum, say about 24 foot, 25 foot across, would be probably maybe 30 foot if he says he couldn't reach it. So he said, we're going up through there. And the thing was, he said that this time around, they didn't take the conventional weapons. He said he'd had a warning in a dream the night before. And he told the story, the way he tells it, this guardian angel always would come to him when he was about to get in trouble and would always warn him of things that he would be facing. And he said, I believe him. You know, and,
yeah.
and he said he was told that night he was going to encounter a being unlike anything he's ever seen in his life. And he said, they will try to kill you and you're not prepared for that battle. What you need. And then the angel began to tell him what he needed. I say angel. I don't know any other. That's just kind of the way he puts it. So I'll just say it that way. He said that there's a certain type of explosive ordnance that we can shoot that when you shoot it into a human, they just blow up. He said they don't survive it either. And he said, but everything that he was being told to take would really mean they had to pack a lot of weight. And so it wouldn't be pleasant, but it was their only hope of survival,
yeah.
Including the type of armor they should take.
And they're in a dry suit.
Yeah, because they're walking on, okay. on ice. They're not.
Yeah.
He said the temperature wasn't bad either. You know, you're still looking at maybe 65, 70 degrees. And he said, so it's not freezing cold where they were at. He said, so we started up. And he said, oddly enough, just like in the case of Ethiopia, he said, we got about 2 miles. And it just as you're starting to go up this incline, he said, what happened was started hearing in their heads, we're going to kill you. And these creatures come out. He said they had heads. You could see the heads clearly, very reddish color heads. He said, but their bodies look like fire and not. You couldn't make out the body because it was like flames.
Wow.
But the head you could see clearly.
Well, that's a different kind of. Are these fallen angels or Nephilim?
That's what I thought. It may have been the imprisoned fallen angels. And the reason being is because Enoch describes exactly that, Bonnie.
Yeah.
He described their body. And let me see if I can just, I don't know if I can see it well enough, but I'll try to look here to see. Let's see. Stars which roll over the fire, these are the ones which transgress the command of the Lord.
Hmm.
And there are several other places in here where it refers to that fire. And I can't see the whole thing because it's just part of the video I'm looking at right now. So I couldn't help but wonder if they had not encountered those fallen angels.
Yeah.
And the odd thing was in a report that I did back to the government when they were asking about where were they, I said to them, I think they're still entrapped in some sort of body, but it's in Antarctica. And then I hear this particular encounter.
Whoa.
And so we had a meeting again, and I explained it to them. I said, they had to have ran into these fallen angels. I said, now, unless it's just some kind of, because the thing is, the government doesn't know of any alien entities that are like this.
That's
at all.
Right.
We never identified anything
no,
like it.
No.
They did take, though, by the way, when they did have the encounter, they would have, it would take 3 to 4 rounds to take one down. They were severely injured. They didn't lose any of their own men. They said they didn't know what they were using against them because they said they couldn't see it. It was just hitting them. So they suffered broken arms. They suffered broken legs. They had broken ribs. They had bruised organs. He said that they were so severely attacked, and he said, and then they retreated back. And he said, when they got back to the sub, they did he did his report of what happened and everything. And then, of course, the commander reads it, goes back, says, "We need one of the bodies." And he said, "You want us to go back?" He said, "Look, we got to have it for the research purposes."
One of the bodies of the fallen angels?
Yes, yes. So they went, he said he got a part of his team that was not that badly injured, went with him to go back up in there, and he said there was nothing there. He said not even our shell casings were there. He said everything had been cleaned up. And I know that there is, at least amongst other alien species, they do have a medical technology that though they be dead, as long as they do it within a certain period of time, they can bring them back. They can literally do a surgery without doing an incision. In fact, the CIA has that technology now as well. They can do the same thing. They could literally take your heart out of your body, do the surgery, and never make an incision in your body to do it.
Whoa. Never need surgery. That's the kind I want.
Yeah, no chest pain, right?
No chest pain. That is... I mean, we are, even the Pope said this week that we are witnessing opening salvos of World War III. This cannot be all that far off. When do you think the Nephilim are, under what circumstances, they're going to arrive? At least one of the onslaughts of them will be the army of the Antichrist. Is that correct?
Well, we're going to be seeing all types of events before then. And
we're going to be seeing what?
All types of things even before then.
Okay.
I know that they're going to, one of the things that I was told early on is that they want to come and appear as if they're the saviors of mankind.
Yeah.
That's supposed to take place in 2026. Now, I don't think that these, they're called Alpha Draconians on Planet X. I don't think that that's part of what they're coming to do. Because their arrival is supposed to be 2029, late 2029 at that. But the other thing is, though, as I was told, that the world would be turmoiled in war and major sicknesses, which they are manufacturing.
Yes.
I've been told that as well, that
as,
it will
as
be
we
a
speak.
Yes. Will be released. So they want the Earth, the human population here, to be in such a dismal situation,
yep.
Their Antichrist, and try to pass him off as the savior of the world. And I can only imagine at that point they'll say, too, and Satan and his minions are coming on Planet X, by the way, to kill all of you if you don't listen to us. So, I mean, who really knows?
Right. You know, I just 2029, and I just get a feeling it's closer than that. We are now. I mean,
I've wondered the same, Bonnie,
yeah.
At this time, 2024, 2025 myself.
Yes, I'm wondering if we're not going to see the Antichrist. If we see war this fall, or at least, I think we might.
Well, here's a thing to think about then, all right? In all the briefings I've been in, one of the key things that they said to me was that Nimrod would be the Antichrist. They would, whether they resurrect the body or they clone the body, one or the other, by using the DNA, they can make a clone of him. They use CERN. They've contacted an entity, claims to be Nimrod. And according to ancient documents, Nimrod would be resurrected. He would be brought back. Now, that's not anything that I guess the public can see, because I still don't know where that's written at. Myself, but he'd be brought back to life, and I'm just kind of putting this in a nutshell for everyone. that he has the ability to access the Sphinx library, and in that library is the information that is needed to know how to defeat, or how they defeated the Alpha Draconians when they came through before the Flood, and when they were in the battle then, and they won over them. And as a result, that they said that Nimrod would not be willing to do it unless he has made some type of deal, like getting to be king of the world. This is why the people in the government believe that he will actually literally play out that Antichrist position, because there are too many people that are corrupt enough in the governments anyway that would be willing to make the deal with him in order to be able just to save the day.
In a heartbeat. You know, just in the few minutes, a couple of minutes that we have left now, you know, is there anything more you want to say? I have a couple of questions, not on the present subject.
Good. Yes, go right ahead.
Okay, you know, we have given $40 billion, $53 billion to Ukraine thus far. The Ukrainians have squat of this. The soldiers say, quoting one, we have nothing. Everything we receive comes from volunteers. Nothing the government has ever reaches us. They gave us a couple of wooden poles that's supposed to be our bunker. We have two AK-47s for five of us, and they're always jammed, because we live in the dust. He's telling his chief, his commander, that they can't hold their position. We are defeated and reinforcements are not coming. 15 soldiers have died here. I have to bring my own car. I have to use my own car, says another one. So the resources, the money, the weaponry is not getting to Ukraine, to the battlefield.
Okay, here's what's interesting, Bonnie.
Okay.
And if you would please send me what you just read there to me, or any of that information you can. I reported on our broadcast recently, I say recently, a few weeks back, 2 weeks back, whatever the case was. I was in a meeting, and this is when I was being told that Bill Clinton had gone over there as an unofficial ambassador, so to speak, to direct how the war would go. And I was told at that point as well, the Ukrainians were in fact indeed the ones bombing the nuclear facility.
Yes.
And it was to get more money out of America in order to send to Ukraine. And yes, as I was told that, it was said to me, the Ukrainian people aren't getting anything.
No.
It's all going only to the leaders and the corrupted officials over there. They're getting all the money, and nobody on the battlefield gets anything.
$53 billion? Are we certain that they're not equipping an army that will rampage Europe?
Well, the thing is, if that kind of money is going there, you have to remember who's propping up this government to begin with. Who put those officials where they're at?
Yeah.
And if they're getting that kind of money, they're getting that money ready for a whole different purpose. As Zelensky has been quoted as saying, and he's only quoting Menachem Schneerson, the famed Chabad Rebbe, this is going to be big Israel.
So, okay, it's going to Israel.
Yes,
not the common people.
No, and it's not even going to Israel per se. What they're planning on doing is they're going to make Ukraine the largest AI country, the most sophisticated in the world in the future. But it's going to be controlled by the Israelis when they do it.
Yeah.
So somewhere along the way, they're going to do it.
Yeah,
this month.
They are using American taxpayer money, indebting Americans, selling us out to build something there. Yeshua, please come. Okay, we are so out of time. Thank you, Stephen, for joining us. Thank you, everyone, for joining us. And hopefully we'll see you next week. Time is very difficult these 3 weeks. I have lots of company. I've had the kids. We have the kids again next week, and it's tough. But
like swift steed, they will run. They will leap the mountain like a flame of fire, like a chariot in the sun.